A lot has been said about the length of contracts that Chelsea are giving out, and we have got a lovely graphic that demonstrates that precisely. There we are. Chelsea players, in total, the squad combined, have 191 years. The nearest one is Tottenham with 97. 191 years.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yeah, Terry's back. Yes, Terry is starting a week later than Jan and I because he's just so much into his German football. He's 1 week behind us. Yes, well, now, welcome back, Terry. And welcome to the new season.
Thank you. Yes, I'm looking forward to the start of the new season.
Well, of course, we all watched our clubs at the weekend. Of course, Jan's club's been in action for a couple of weeks now, Sunderland. It's going great, isn't it, Jan? I haven't even conceded a goal yet.
Oh, Graham, don't say that. Don't say that. Well, I'll tell you why I'm saying don't say that in a minute. But yes, it's going very, very well. An excellent display last week away to Cardiff was followed up with a absolutely amazing display, I think, against Sheffield Wednesday, who themselves put four past Plymouth last week. So they were quite buoyed, and they had a good win in the League Cup against Hull during the week. So I thought, given the way that they finished last season, they got a win at our place on the last day of last season to keep themselves up. I thought this was going to be a little bit closer than it actually turned out to be. But credit to Sunderland, because I thought they were amazing. They absolutely blew them away. When you and I were exchanging a few messages, Graham, you pointed out that they were just punishing Sheffield Wednesday for every mistake they made, and they were clinical in doing that. They were excellent. And it was good to see the young striker we have, Mayenda. There was a lot of concern that Sunderland don't have a proper or senior striker. So he's been filling the void. Didn't have the most productive week last week, but he certainly made up for it this week. His first goal was an absolute belter. So I was really pleased for him. And just pleased for everyone. As I said, I think there's a real sense of optimism on Wearside at the moment. So it was great to see, really great to see. On to the second point I was going to make, don't say that we haven't conceded any goals yet, is we're playing Burnley next. And Burnley have scored 9 goals in 2 games. So we've scored 6, but 9 in 2. They put 4 past Luton and 5 past Cardiff. I think they're going to be pretty tasty this season. So if we can get a result out of that, then I'll be very, very happy. I'll really fancy us for to do something special.
Well, Terry, that's the magic touch of Scott Parker, isn't it?
It is. I mean, he is very much at his level. I mean, I am going to suggest to you, some people actually might suggest to you, unkind people might suggest to you that Nelly the Elephant could manage that Burnley side in the Championship and get them up. But not me, not me. This is all down to the Parks and his tactical nous and vision. Burnley very much in the not good enough for the Premier League, but way too good for the Championship thing. And we do see these teams come along every now and then, don't we? And this is where they are, the classic yo-yo club.
Yeah. It was Norwich for a little while. It was Fulham for a little while. And now could it be Burnley? I don't think it probably could be. Arsenal had a good win at home to Wolves. Nice, straightforward, no calamities, no excitement, just go out and win 2-0. Palace didn't have such an easy start, did they, to their Premier League season, did they, Terry?
No, and it's a difficult one because we don't have a tremendously good record against Brentford. We've not lost to them until now, since they've been promoted, but we've usually got rather humdrum draws against them. We really could have had a goal unfairly chalked off. The referee after the game did acknowledge that he should not have blown the whistle while Eze was taking his shot. He should have waited and then gone to VAR. And I like to think that VAR would have overturned that foul, which caused the referee to blow the whistle in the first place. But there's a few ifs and buts in that scenario, so probably best to not get better. I was seething with rage at the time, but 24 hours later, I'm feeling a lot more sanguine about it. Lots of encouragements. I thought Kamada had a good game for while he was there. obviously, we've only just signed Sarr and he's had trouble settling in. I think that Mateta was maybe a little bit jaded. Fantastic achievement from Mateta to come back from France with an Olympic medal. Absolutely brilliant. Congratulations to him. Maybe a little bit jaded. So there was good bits and bad bits to see there for Palace, but no need, I think, to get too upset at this point.
No, it's still August. There is still business to be done. That seems to be the narrative at the moment in the post-match. Will you be buying any more? Will you be selling any more? And this weekend, it was noticeable, I think, for players that didn't play as much as players that did. In the Palace game, Ivan Toney didn't play. Brentford still looked pretty good. Then again, they got used to playing without him, didn't they, last season?
Yeah, it was all a bit strange. He'd been training and it looked like he was all set and he was certainly in any most preliminary predicted squads. And then rather unexpectedly, when the team sheet was handed, he wasn't playing. And Thomas Frank said after the game that the situation was a bit fluid and complicated, not exactly using his words, but paraphrasing. And the talk is that there is an offer coming in from one of the Saudi Pro League clubs and that Ivan Toney would like to make that move.
That's an interesting move, isn't it, Jan? Off to Saudi. He's only 28. Younger players are going out there, and there are players in their early 20s going out there for the payday. We can't see inside his head or understand what the real machinations are, but it does seem like a weird move to leave a Premier League club to go to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I think so. I think at 28, I think that's a bit early to be going somewhere for a payday. You know, Ivan Toney, he's put behind him now the lengthy ban he had for his indiscretions. And, you know, in the limited time that he played for England in the Euros, I thought he was really, really useful. And I think, you know, he could be looking to crack on. Obviously, I don't know if he is trying to engineer something or whether a club's just come in legitimately and said they're interested in buying him. But I think it would be the wrong move for him to go to Saudi, because I just think he's got so much to offer at a decent level. You know, well, I don't be too disparaging, but he could play in any of the top leagues in Europe and do really, really well. And I think if that is the case, that's the wrong move for him. But it may not be. I mean, that just could be newspaper talk and he could be off to somewhere a bit more legitimate.
Legitimate. Nice word.
Legitimate. Yeah. Love it.
Well, he wasn't the only one who didn't play at the weekend, was he? Because Romelu Lukaku is still looking for a club that wants to buy him. Well, I think there are plenty of clubs that want him, but business has to be done for players to go the other way. I think Osimhen, I think it's looking like a straight swap, isn't it, with Napoli at the moment, Terry, isn't it? Osimhen for Lukaku?
That is what is trying to be engineered. Osimhen was not playing for Napoli, despite, I think, being fit. And Lukaku not playing for Chelsea, despite. So if we're to project this narrative onto the players, that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing two players who want to play for the other clubs. Osimhen wants to leave Napoli. Fair enough. He's been there a long time, or longish time. He wants to go and he wants to go and play in the Premier League. And that's all good. That's cool. I mean, like, he's Nigerian. Nigeria loves the Premier League. Why would he not want to go and play in the Premier League? Plus, to Chelsea, because they pay so much lovely, lovely money. And Lukaku wants to be a Neapolitan. He wants to go back to his mate Antonio Conte at Napoli. This is a deal that wants to be done. It's just they have to work out the mechanics. They have to work out the commercials and all of that stuff. And so I would suggest that there's a bit of work that needs to be done, because Chelsea, not so much, but Napoli have money issues. And so it's all a little bit complicated how they make that work. My instinct is that they will make that work, but it might have to wait until deadline day. So it could be a bit of deadline day drama for all you people who are fans of the yellow tickers. It's an interesting one. And I think Conte, after Napoli's 3-0 defeat on the opening day to Verona, it's possible that Conte, who has already been somewhat critical of the situation, claiming that he did not realise the amount of difficulties that there would be when he arrived at Napoli. He's already getting his excuses in early, if you were being cynical about it. He is almost certainly going to be putting the board at Napoli under a great deal of pressure to bring some people in and to bring his guy in. And his guy is Lukaku. He loves him.
It's not really straightforward anymore, is it? You can't just open up your wallet or your overdraft and just go and buy a player anymore, can you? You've got to think about all the PSR and everything. And then there's the players. God, the players, what their demands are. Who are they? Come on, look, you're getting paid a load of money. Just accept it and put up and shut up. But no, doesn't seem to work that way anymore, does it? Players, God, dear, never had it so good. And if they're not just grumbling about it on Twitter, they're actually getting statements put out. Look at Raheem Sterling getting his PR people to put statements out. What's going on there, Jan? What on earth does the game come to now?
Political correctness gone mad, Graham, isn't it? Or health and safety, or whatever gammons moan about. So Sterling was left out of the starting lineup yesterday for Chelsea's game against Manchester City, and his people issued a statement saying they were seeking clarification as to why he wasn't playing, which is, I wouldn't say it's unheard of, but it's very rare for a player to do that actually as the team was being announced to the general public. This dropped on social media. So yeah, it is a bit of a strange one. It's an interesting one for him. He's a 29-year-old player. I would say his star is fading somewhat. He's probably not going to play for England again, but he's on probably a great deal of money because he's got a very long contract, another 3 years of a five-year deal to run with Chelsea. Chelsea have been buying a lot of players. I think they're north of 40 first-team players now that they've got, and they're obviously trying to get rid of Conor Gallagher, but bring in Joao Felix, and I think that's even tied into the Osimhen transfer as well. So that's a very complex set of circumstances that need to align there. But from Sterling's point of view, he's probably wondering, you know, where do I fit in at all of this? And so I think it's fair that he asked the question. Not too sure about asking it so publicly, though, unless, of course, he feels like he's already pursued that route and not got the answer he wanted, or not got an answer at all.
Well, they've got a 42-man squad there now, apparently, according to the BBC. And you can only put out 20 on a match day. So if Enzo Maresca's got to go round and talk to all the other 22 players and give them clarity as to why they're not being picked, that's a lot of time. I mean, if you think about it, if they're having 20-minute chats or for each of them, God, that's going to take 7 hours, 20 minutes. That's how long it's going to take. And that's not including wee break.
Which is only a full day's work. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's almost a full day's work, that is. Not counting lunch hour, obviously, and 15-minute breaks, naturally. I think to an extent, Raheem Sterling's issue wasn't just that he wasn't in the starting 11, but that he wasn't in that squad. He wasn't even on the bench. And he clearly feels, or he should feel, frankly, that he's a senior pro and he's a very good player. You know, maybe in decline to an extent, but at 29, there's still plenty there from him and that he's got a lot to offer. And yeah, he's probably a little bit miffed. And I would agree that I don't think that you make that kind of statement unless you feel you've got little option. It might well be that he's just, yeah, he's not had much clarification from the club directly, and he feels as if he's not being given the kind of respect that he feels he deserves, or he's not being given the time of day. Who knows? Who knows? One thing we do know about Raheem Sterling is he's taken quite a lot of stick down the years from various people in various quarters, and he has learned how to defend himself, and he has learned how to play the PR game as well, because he's had to. Back in 2018, 2016, he was roundly demonized by the right-wing media because he was Raheem Sterling. And so, you know, there's maybe a little bit of side there going on. He knows how to play the game, so to speak. So we'll be interested to see what unfolds. What I'm less clear on, maybe you guys will have a better idea of this. I'm not entirely certain what his end game is. What does he want? Do you want to leave or does he want to play for Chelsea?
For me, that looks like he wants to leave. He wants to be put at the top of the list of players exiting the club. But I don't think he wants to leave if that means getting less money than what he's earning at Chelsea. And he's got 3 years left on his contract. That's his money. So anything that comes out of a move away should reflect that 3 years of contract he's still got at the club. Because he's done nothing wrong. He's turned up and played, and he's been treated, well, let's not say shoddily. We don't know what's going on inside the club. But for make a move like this does seem weird, but especially for a player who is, as you say, at the top of the game. For someone who's at the top of their game, a statement like this really would be just engineering a move, wouldn't it? But for him, who's not had the easiest time since he moved to Chelsea, and hasn't been picked for England since the World Cup. 82 games for England. He was one of Southgate's favourites there. Didn't go to the Euros. So it's difficult to see who'll be beating down the door for him, unless, of course, the wheels within wheels, the transfer merry-go-round starts and then players start hopping around from one club to the other. The whole Conor Gallagher thing has been depending on who Chelsea is signing from Atletico Madrid. And I think this week it's João Félix who they're after. And I think that's just about to go through. I think the news tickers are suggesting that that's been done. But Chelsea seem to have done most of their business at the end of June, when it caused a bit of furore when Ian Maatsen, who had been on loan at Dortmund last season, played in the Champions League final, moved to Villa. Villa sold a player back to Chelsea, all in a movement of money at the end of June, just to try to get them. I think Everton were involved in there as well. A lot of clubs which have PSR question marks hanging over them, just moving players around, basically like commodities that they need to shift from one balance sheet to another. Now, I don't want to get bogged down in amortization, because I can't even say it. But the upshot of it is, if you sell a player, that player is a very positive thing on your bank balance straight away, all of that money. If you buy a player, the negative impact of that amount of money is spread over the length of the contract. That's it, basically. Well, there was talk in the middle of summer, and there still is rumblings about it, that this is a loophole, this is gaming the system. Well, yeah, maybe selling your hotel to yourself is a loophole. Selling the women's team to another part of the group is a loophole. But Richard Masters doesn't seem to agree. Richard Masters made a statement just a couple of days ago saying that everyone knows the rules and the rules are very clear. And he's quite sanguine about it, saying, well, you know, I don't think what they're doing is necessarily trying to escape PSR. So he's almost leaving the door open for clubs to just come up with creative ways to try and get around the situation they're in without having to have points deducted. I can see it in certain respects, the whole thing of like the difference between buying and selling. That's the way business accounts are done anyway. That's just a very established way of doing business. And maybe even the hotel thing is an established thing, because I think we've seen before where, I think this is what happened with Palace, wasn't it? Because I think Nodes transferred the ownership of the ground into another company when he sold Palace, didn't he?
He did. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
May he rest in peace.
Well, yes. So it's nothing new there, is it, either, as well? So at least Chelsea haven't done that. But they can't do that because the ground is actually owned by the fans, by a supporters group.
It's the pitch, isn't it? That was Ken Bates' idea. He brought that in. Of the many horrible things Ken Bates did and said, that counts among his biggest achievements. And that was a very, very wise idea of him. I feel a bit sick now.
Well, yeah, what do you think about what Richard Masters has said about the fact that he doesn't consider this to be a loophole and he's quite comfortable with the way that Chelsea have been doing business?
Well, I think for most people, this is how they're going to be exposed to how finance works within businesses, and they're going to see it and go, that doesn't sound normal. You know, it's not just a straightforward transaction. So you can probably understand people, I include myself in that, being a little bit puzzled when they see a hotel being sold from one part of the same company to another. And I suppose players are going to be part of that as well, as we've seen. But what is interesting is that to not necessarily get around it, but what the one thing Chelsea has been doing, we've seen this a lot, is they've been bringing players in, putting them on very long contracts to deal with what you talked about, spreading the cost of the transfer across the length of that contract. So we had players coming in for 8-year contracts and things like that. And Sterling's isn't as long as that, but it is a 5-year contract. Maybe tying players into contracts of that length where they're, and it's not unheard of for a player to come in, do a season or so, and be flavour of the month, and suddenly they're not so popular anymore, and they start to drift back into being a squad player. And I think maybe that's what's happening here, that Raheem Sterling and his representatives are looking at that going, well, hang about, it was 2 years ago we came in and I'm earning 6 figures a week, and I've got this huge signing on bonus, and I've got a 5-year contract, so I've got real stability for the rest of my career. So great, I'm going to be playing for one of the biggest teams in the world, and suddenly I'm not even on the squad list for match day. So I think maybe there's a bit of that behind it. And I wonder whether this could be something you'd see more of, and more so from Chelsea, because they've pursued that tactic, really, of giving out the long contracts.
And they are still doing it. Pedro Neto has been given a 7-year deal. Kinnan Dewsbury-Hall, a 6-year deal. Philip Jorgensen, backup goalkeeper, a 7-year deal. Just trying to think. Amari Kellerman, 6-year deal. Renato Viega, 7-year deal. Another one as well. So it's not just the high-end ones. These guys are coming in for between 10 and 20 million. And all that money is being spread out over the years. But surely that's just kicking the can, because after 5 or 6 years of this, then the whole spreading it out doesn't really count up for much anymore, because you're still having to do this. You're still having to offer stretched out contracts. And so it will catch you up. I'm pretty sure it will. I'm pretty sure that's how the numbers work, that it will catch up eventually. Or they just hope that PSL will go away after a few years.
That's a good possibility, that that's the strategy from Todd Boehly, is that, all being well, PSR will either be relaxed or changed or scrapped altogether, and they'll be able to sort of go back to how things were back in the good old days when Roman Abramovich was owning the club and could just go out and spend his money on his football club and nobody would really be able to stop him. So, yeah, it does seem like that. I mean, amortization, and I don't think I pronounced that right either. Yeah, I mean, I have heard of this term before as a business term, and if it is you can argue as to whether or not you think it's a good thing or not, but it is an established business practice. So I don't think that, I think in that respect, on that matter, Richard Masters is probably correct. You know, this is just how business works, how capitalism works, and we're all capitalists, so that's all good in the hood. But what worries me, and I think this is also what probably is something to think about with the football regulator, is that the direction of travel, I think, is moving towards, if anything, tighter regulation rather than deregulation. I don't think we live in that world at the moment. And I do feel that perhaps that's, I agree with you, Graham. I think there's a possibility that Chelsea have gone down a strategy and they have misread the signals. And in fact, as you say, could find themselves with a bill, because they can't presumably keep signing players on long-term contracts without having to at some point get rid of some of those players on long-term contracts. Maybe they feel in some instances they'll be able to sell these players on, and because they've got a long-term contract, they'll be protected and they'll get big transfer fees. But, you know, there's only X number of clubs that have got money to spend. I mean, we're seeing in Europe how there was all of this trading going on. You've got Atletico Madrid who want to sign Gallagher. The guys sat in a hotel room in Madrid for 5 days thinking, all right, any minute now, lads, and I'll be down there and I'll be signing and I'll be holding up the shirt. And then they had to send him home because they couldn't make it work out. One, because of this thing with João Félix, but also there's this guy, a young player in Valencia, who have got a crop of cracking young players, and they want to sign him in, but they can't make it work. There's a real squeeze going on right now, and it is not ideal circumstances. Now, this is football. In football, things change, and they change very quickly. So you never know. So, you know, a year or two down the line, the landscape may look very differently. But I do think that Chelsea are playing a dangerous game with their finances.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm guessing they've done all the research on this, and they can afford some very, very good accountants to check the numbers on this. But it's people that they're dealing with, that they're moving around, aren't they? So it's not just assets, the value of which may go up and down. If they offer a long-term contract to a player, they've got every right to expect that amount of money to come to them. That's what contracts are all about. For me, this is what the Sterling situation is. I don't think they want him on their books anymore. I think they want rid of him. But also, they're going to struggle to find another club that's A, going to pay a transfer fee for him and going to pay his wages, because he's not going to take a drop just because Chelsea don't fancy him anymore.
You're right. Who's going to be able to afford to buy him out of that contract and pay his wages? And that puts him in a very, very difficult situation. So maybe that's why he's trying to inject a little urgency into the situation to try and, you know, get there before the other, you know, 15, 20 players that are going to be on the market from Chelsea fairly soon, because they're all in the same situation. I think it's a dangerous game for Chelsea for all of the reasons you've both gone through. But I think as well as that, they may struggle to shift these players, and that's going to really cause them some problems. And as well as that, it's a reputational thing there as well. Because if this keeps going on, then you're going to struggle to attract players because they're going to go, well, if I'm going to go there like Sterling did, straight in the side, and then 18 months later, I'm not flavour of the month anymore, and then I'm just sitting and rotting on the bench. I mean, personally, I have no problem sitting and rotting on the bench for 300 grand a week. But then again, I'm not a professional athlete. And if I was, I'd probably want to be out there showcasing my talents. So it is a difficult thing. You're right. I think the people aspect of this is not being fully considered.
Mm. Terry, I suppose the good news for Chelsea is that it gives them a perfectly made excuse for not showing up against City at the weekend, because it was all Raheem Sterling's fault, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I never turned down an opportunity to blame Raheem Sterling on anything. I mean, particularly when he pulls a stunt like that. Yeah, a pretty average game of football, won in functional style by Manchester City. I mean, Jan's right to point out the whole... I mean, if it was us, we'd sit on the bench for 300 grand a week. We'd just do it. But that's because we're just working stiffs and we're not professional athletes. And so we project our own miserable standards on these guys. Raheem Sterling has been an England player since, what, under 15s?
Yeah.
Under 17s? I watched Raheem Sterling play for England under 17s. You know, he is an England player in his mind, I think. And he hasn't been now since Qatar. You know, we could possibly be looking at this and saying, look, this guy doesn't feel he's done enough yet. He's got more to offer. But he needs to be playing. He wants to play for England and he wants to play football because that is what he loves doing. And, you know, I don't know the guy, of course I don't. But, you know, he's done some interviews over the years. And I think, and I mean, unless he's being massively insincere, I think that this is a man who loves playing football, loves playing in the big crowds, loves the big occasion, wants to be there. And at 29, he knows he's only got, I don't know, 5 or 6 years left at the top level if he's doing well. And he doesn't want to be spending the next three of those sat on a bench at Chelsea. So, you know, hopefully what will happen is that humanity will resurface. A conversation will be had and say, all right, Raheem, let's see if we can move you on, at the very least on loan, but with massively unfavourable terms. I mean, if Chelsea are going to pay him to sit on his ass for the next 3 years, then why not actually send him on loan to another club who won't be able to match his wages, but say, well, look, if you can match a quarter of his wages, then you can have him for a season on loan, and then just do that for the next 3 years and get the kid out playing again. That way he could come to Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that'd be good. Be a nice replacement for Mateta when he goes somewhere.
My personal take on Mateta is that that was a big flash in the pan. That was a lightning bolt moment. I'm not sure we'll see that again from him. Hey, prove me wrong, Jean-Philippe. Prove me wrong.
Well, Chelsea did lose to City in a very, very functional format. It wasn't that level of chaos that we saw last season. Do we think that Enzo Maresca got that wrong? Do you think he needed to bring the chaos against City rather than just coming up and say, look, I learned everything from you, master. Look how I present the team. Oh, you've beaten me. That's how it felt to me anyway. Do you think Maresca got the game plan wrong on Sunday, Jan?
I mean, far be it from me to be able to instruct a professional football coach on how to take down Pep Guardiola. I'm not sure how to answer that question. You know, it's his first game in charge and there's clearly some stuff going on in the background there. He's got to work out a way of shipping a lot of players on, and then his first game's against his mentor. So I don't blame him for not getting a result, really.
Maresca's made a mistake going to Chelsea. I'm going to say that. He should have stayed at Leicester. I really do think that he should have stayed at Leicester in the same way that Kieran McKenna is staying at Ipswich. There is a good chance that he could have got relegated with there, but I think there's more honour in staying at Leicester, and I think that there's more opportunities to work with the players that you already know. Chelsea is a very, very difficult club to manage, particularly if you've never managed in the Premier League before. I know it's difficult. You back your ability to manage that situation. But of all the big Premier League clubs to go to, Chelsea is probably the least forgiving. Not from the fans' point of view, but I mean just forgiving because of its process and its structure. It's not a flexible club, I think. It is ridiculously flexible because there's absolutely zero structure. I don't know. You know, can you have no structure and still be quite rigid? I don't know. I don't know whether... Yes, you can. And it's called Chelsea.
Well, I think it's just being a solid, isn't it?
Like a flapjack. Say solid, but ultimately still porridge. This is not working.
Yes. If I can drag us away from the food analogies for a second and ask a football-related question. Do we think Maresca's going to be there, well, two-part question, by Christmas or by the end of the season? Do we think he'll be gone?
I think he'll see out the whole season, but then be gone. He'll go in the summer. That's what I reckon.
Like Poch did.
Mm. Yeah. Terry?
I think Todd Bowley's probably got about 5 or 6 different head coaches on the payroll still from those that he's fired. So I think he'll be reluctant to have another one on the payroll. Although if Poch does go to the US men's national team, then that'll free up some of his fired coaches that are still on the payroll. And then maybe he will be able to sack him by October. I think he's on thin ice. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry, that doesn't really answer your question. But yeah, all right, fine. No, I think he'll be gone by May. I'm just saying that to be contrary, because Graham said he was going to stay. And I just feel that it's important to have that balance.
Thanks for introducing that piece of jeopardy into the podcast there, Jan. What do you think? What sort of season do you think Chelsea are going to have? I don't think they're going to trouble the Champions League places, put it that way. And I think that'll be enough for Burnley to sack him in the summer.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it'll be another situation similar to what Poch went through, really. I don't think they're going to rip up any trees this year. And we've got a big mess to sort out. And he's a coach that's inexperienced at this level, and the demand, if he's not going to win it, bring some silverware back, then he'll be gone, I think. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, it's probably around now that I'd be saying, yes, well, let's have a look and see who they'll be playing at the weekend. But they're not in our box set this weekend. We're giving them a week off. But who is? Who is in the box set this week? Well, Arsenal are. Arsenal are going to be in there against Aston Villa. Lost twice against Aston Villa last season. And it cost them the title. We've also got St. Pauli versus Heidenheim. St. Pauli back in the Bundesliga. Terry, how's that going to go?
That's one of the reasons why it's being previewed, is because we do not know. I mean, St. Pauli lost their coach, Fabian Hertzler, who is now at Brighton. 31-year-old Fabian Hertzler. He took St. Pauli up. They are back in the Bundesliga for the first time since 2010, I want to say, possibly 2011. And it's going to be emotional. Heidenheim were a bit of a miracle club last season, but they've lost Jan-Niklas Beste. He's gone to Benfica, quite rightly so, because he was really good. So he's now gone to a big football club. There's two really uncertain teams there, and I won't say any more because I'll save it for the preview, but it's going to be a fascinating match between those two. Good to see St. Pauli in the Bundesliga.
You're also covering Napoli-Bologna this weekend as well. But I guess you're going to wait till the last minute to write that, just in case Osimhen leaves and Lukaku arrives.
Well, indeed. Although, as I said, I think my instinct is that could be the deadline day story, personally, because I think that'll take a while to sort out. But yeah, I didn't check out Bologna. Bologna were playing at the same time as Napoli. So I watched about a half of the Napoli game. Yeah, that 3-0 defeat to Verona, of all clubs. They really hate Verona. The Neapolitan shit has hit the Neapolitan fan very much. And when the shit hits the fan in Napoli, it's a big fan and it's a huge amount of shit. So things may well escalate in that time. So that's worth seeing. And of course, we're all interested to see what Bologna do, given that they've had the guts of their squad ripped out of them from last season, including their coach, and to see whether or not they can build on what they achieved last season.
We may not be able to see much of them play this season in the UK, because TNT have really dialed back on their coverage of Serie A, and we're not even sure what they're actually going to be doing now. At the moment, it looks like they're only showing 2 games per weekend, which is a bit disappointing. Actually, next weekend, I think they've only got 1 game on, and they've got the other game is on the Monday night. Coupled with that, the fact that they've got no French football on there at all at the moment, it's really gone down the amount of output that we can get if you've got a TNT subscription. It's quite disappointing, isn't it, Terry?
I think that we're reaching the end of this kind of moderately golden age of being able to watch European leagues on widely available subscription channels. I mean, La Liga's been off Sky for a number of years now. If you're not getting the numbers in, and I suspect that they're not, then, you know, and if you're not really selling subscriptions off the back of it, then I suspect that's what this is really all about. I think it's really interesting for the Bundesliga as well, because the Bundesliga's got 1 year left on its contract with Sky. But of course, I don't know how much Bundesliga we're going to be watching this season, because you know, with the EFL deal being what it is, there's just so much more EFL football all over the place now. Yeah, it looks like we're all going to be siloing off. It's going to be interesting times for the box sets in years to come.
Yeah.
Because like, will we say, well, you know, why are we previewing a game that's going to be on like Triller TV and like maybe five people subscribe to that? Well, how much value is there in stuff like that? But these are conversations that we can have over time. But yeah, sadly, it looks like everything's being siloed off. So if you like your Portuguese football, brilliant. Triller TV. But if you like European football, you want to watch a Portuguese game of a weekend, and one Italian game of a weekend, one Spanish game of the weekend, no, those days are over, I'm afraid. Sad.
Yeah, you have to choose a league and commit to it now, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, if you want to see what games we've picked from the ones that are available on our subscription services for you to watch this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. Put your email address in the little box and you will be signed up to Substack. You've probably got a Substack account already, so just add us on there. We'll be yet another email that you'll get and won't read. But read our one, because it's really good. 2,000 words on the 7 games that you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! That was a good chat, actually, wasn't it? It wasn't really a transfer chat, was it? Well, it was really, wasn't it?
We don't do transfer chats, really.
Apart from the one that we just did.
From that one.
We literally said that we're hearing that João Félix is going to Chelsea. We literally said that on the podcast.
That was for context, though.
Terry's literally wearing yellow.
I've got my little yellow thingy here.
Hey, there's new yellow everywhere. It's like deadline day in here.
Yeah, it's a shame we're not on YouTube. Otherwise, you know, it would have been quite effective.
It would have been.